Welcome to the Best Ever You Network, celebrating our third year on Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. Thank you for helping us become a number one rated live show with over 1 million global listeners. Our team is on a mission to help you discover your authentic best self and bring it to the world. And now, here's our show.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino. Thank you so much for listening to the Best Ever You Show, and I know we're going to have to update that introduction soon because we're really getting close to 2 million downloads. And so thank you so much for listening and following our show and sharing it on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr, and I'm seeing it everywhere, and I just love it. I even see it on LinkedIn. So thank you so much for just helping us share all these wonderful guests with the world and their stories and their accomplishments and everything that they do to help us all be our best. And I want to thank Jill for introducing me to our next guest, who is Allegra Kent. She's a beautiful, legendary ballerina, and she's here with us, and I'm going to be quiet and just say hi. How are you, Allegra? Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm good. Thank you for inviting me. And what would you like to hear about?
I would love to hear about, just you in the beginning, like who are your first teachers and what school you went to, and just take us on your journey. I want to hear all about you.
Well, I think I'll take a start a little before that. My mother was very restless, and this was during World War II, and we constantly changed coasts between California and Florida. But at a certain point, she decided to put my brother and me in a boarding school because she thought that would be really good for our education. And she chose a boarding school in California. And I was 9, my brother was 10. And at 9, I had never seen ballet. I'd only heard of it. And so the first year, I kept thinking about what I'd like to do when I grew up. And the second year, they introduced folk dancing. And I loved it so much. And they also had 3 records in the living room of the boarding school, and I would play them over and over again and dance to them. So I wrote my mother a letter telling her to please take me out because I wanted to become a ballerina. And what I thought was that a ballerina was a grown-up profession, and it would help me keep my childhood forever. Of course, I really knew nothing about ballet except that you dance. So after my second year of boarding school, mother took me home, and she started looking for a teacher. And she found Bronislava Nijinska. So let me explain who Bronislava was. She the sister of Václav Nijinsky, and the very, very famous dancer from Russia. So she thought, oh, this is where Allegra should start to study. So we went over to the school, and my mother said to the secretary, I'd like to enroll my daughter in the beginner's class. And the lady at the desk said, we don't have beginners. We have intermediate and advanced only. So my mother thought for a second, and she said, okay, I'll enroll my daughter in the intermediate class.
So aren't you lucky?
So I went into the class, and who did I see but many, many men who were on the GI Bill of Rights, and they, after the war, the brutal, horrible war that they served in, they wanted to dance. So they had already been studying for a little while, and I think they didn't realize that you just can't start to become a ballet dancer at 22. But I was very moved by seeing all these men in class, and I was a little girl and knew nothing about ballet, really, except I wanted to dance. So after the first class, I thought, this is impossible. It's just like I came in and everyone knew what to do, and I didn't know anything. But I understood pliés, because you bend your knees in a plié. And plié is the word for French. It means bend in French. So I thought, the whole world knows how to bend their knees. So that I can do. And at the end, we did big jumps all around the room, and that I knew how to do. Just the whole middle I didn't know how to do. And I thought, oh, I guess I'll give up. But I had moxie in my personality. So I told my mother I told my mother to take me to the library so I could find out more, you know, at least look at dancers' pictures and try to figure out what the ballet terms were, because they were all in French. And so she did that, and I just kept working and working, and I had natural coordination, dare I say it. So I caught up very quickly.
Yeah.
And so I proceeded, and I studied 3 years in California with Nijinska and a few other teachers. And then my mother and I came to New York. I was 14, and everyone told us we should go to the School of American Ballet. And the year was 1951. That's quite a while ago, if you can subtract.
Oh, good.
I mean, it's over half a century. And my mother walked in and said, I want a scholarship. So the ladies at the desk there said, well, we can't do that till Mr. George Balanchine. They just got sees your daughter in class. And he won't be in town for 2 weeks. So he came to class in 2 weeks, and he just walked in, and every girl in the room went, oh! And I'd really never heard of Balanchine, so I just saw a man walk in, and I had no reaction. Like, oh, here's the famous Balanchine. And he walked to the front of class, and he looked for about 5 minutes, and then he walked out. And at the end of class, I thought, oh, my gosh, I wonder if I got a scholarship. So I walked out, and Mother said, yes, you have a scholarship. And one of the teachers gave me a lifesaver. He was so excited that I'd won a scholarship. Well, I was in the school for 14 to 15 when I was invited to join the New York City Ballet as an apprentice. And I started, I'd never been in a school recital, let alone on stage. So I started with the New York City Ballet in the second movement, Symphony C, in the Corps de Ballet. And I didn't know how to put on makeup. Unlike the girls of today, by 15, everyone seems to know how to put makeup on, but I didn't. But after a while, I learned what I should be doing. And my first tour of Europe was when I was 16, and that was 1953. And we toured all over Italy, and that was so exciting. All that great art and all those museums. And I think our per diem was $35 a week. But that was enough, so it just shows you how things were in Europe.
Changed, yeah. Wow. So you knew. You knew when you were a kid.
Yeah, I didn't know till I was 9 that I wanted to dance. And when after my mother took me to the library, I saw the dancers were standing on point. And that was very interesting to me. Point shoes.
Yeah. How do you do
that? I had never seen ballet because we were not necessarily in big cities. We were really just in small areas of Florida and California. And the only chance to see it would have been to go to a performance. And the Ballet Russe didn't tour that much. So then, when I became an apprentice, I started going backstage and standing in the wings and watching performances of wonderful, amazing dancers and learning and getting ideas and then thinking, oh, I don't know if I will ever get to do that part. But if I did, I would do it differently than the person I just saw. So I had a lot of ideas.
You know, what kind of work and what kind of your own ideas go into becoming great?
The choreography is there. You don't change the choreography, but you might change the interpretation a little bit to fit your feeling about the music and how. And then if Balanchine thought you were wrong, he'd tell you. But if he liked what you were doing, it's sort of like a sentence. When you say a sentence and in a slightly different way, if you're an actor, maybe it's the same words, but you give a different feeling to it, different nuance. But it's not totally free, but it's some. You can put your stamp on something. So I did do that, and when I was 17, Balanchine created a section called the Unanswered Question section of Iziana. And this is how I found out about it. Every evening after we rehearsed, they'd put up a call board that would say, call who was to appear for a certain rehearsal, 2:30 or this and that. And I was looking at the call board and I saw my name. And there were five men and me. So, I mean, it said Kent and then it named it. And I thought, oh my gosh, does this mean I have a good part? I'm the only girl in this particular section. But no one had told me, Balanchine or the ballet mistress, you know what. So I thought, oh, I mustn't get too excited because maybe I don't have a principal part. But as it turned out, I did. And so that was the thrilling that Balanchine had wanted me for a particular part when I was still in this corps de ballet. But he saw me as the only person in the company that he felt would be right for it.
That means what a moment. And is that a lot? I've come to know you through your book, Ballerina Swan. Is part of what you're saying right now and sharing, it seems like that's a lot of what's in this book.
Yes. Well, I dedicate the book to my grandchildren, but also I say in loving memory of George Balanchine, who believed in unusual casting. So, yes.
That's great.
It's a sort of life story, but not exactly. But
it's beautiful.
It's a small novel. I've also written an autobiography called Once a Dancer. So that's a real memoir. It's not. Children's books are usually, picture books are 30 pages.
Mm-hmm. But, I think this book also is very inspiring to young people who might walk into like a ballet class and think, well, I don't fit in here, or I can't do this, or what do I have to do to work hard enough to accomplish a dream or a goal? Mm-hmm.
Also not give in too quickly. But usually nowadays people start in the beginning, so
Not right into the intermediate class, you mean? That's funny.
But also, even if you don't become a dancer, you can learn coordination. It's a different way of thinking. You're commanding your body. You're doing things you might not necessarily do. You work on balance. There are things that you can learn from dancing and ballet that you might not learn from anything else, but it doesn't have to be your life profession. But if it gives you a lot of joy, and that's so important. You told me you were a gymnast.
Yeah, I was, and I know this definitely isn't about me at all, but I so agree with you on, if it's not something, I'm not a professional gymnast or a ballerina or a tap dancer or a jazz dancer or a baton twirler, but those are things that I loved as a kid starting at age 3 and absolutely love them. And, I was a gymnast since age 3, and I remember vividly when they took me aside and said, "You need some ballet to lighten up your tumbling, because I'm stockier than light and thin and ballerina like. I'm Mary Lou Retton like, I'm a power tumbler."
Oh, yes.
And they told me ballet would just completely change my game on the floor. And did. And I'll tell you, to this day, as an older person, I'm 46, almost 46, and I will tell you, when I ache, I stretch like a ballerina.
Mm-hmm.
I do my pliés, or I do my arms over my, whatever. I'm sure it's not as beautiful as you by any means, but, my body feels better when I stretch.
The thing about stretching now is that they're saying don't do extreme stretches until you're warmed up, because you're jolting your muscles. So, I see a lot of people before class and they're doing acrobatics, and it's better to warm up before you do that. But yes, stretching, oh my gosh. Stretching is important for the body and the mind and the soul. Yeah. And, so I don't know if we have time, but in 1962, the New York City Ballet went to Russia, and that was part of a sort of exchange. Things were lightening up in Russia. They weren't quite as dire as they were during the Stalin era. And so we were invited there, and my daughter was 2 years old at that time, and I thought, I don't know if I want to leave my daughter. We were told once we went to Russia, we couldn't go out until the company left. Well, we went to Moscow and started to perform, and suddenly, this is 1962, we were in the midst of the Russian-Cuban, missile crisis. Because that was fall, and Kennedy was president, and it looked like the world was going to blow up in atomic warfare. And the ambassador, who was in the American ambassador, came over to tell us about this, because there was no media, no television, no radio, but he came over to tell us, and we were frightened out of our wits. And I thought, oh my gosh, if we're all going to die, I want my daughter to be in my arms when we die. But we didn't stop performing. So no matter how we felt, I just kept sewing the ribbons on my pointe shoes. And the Russian audience just kept coming to see us, because we were a phenomenal hit in Russia. They had never seen Balanchine's choreography. They were flabbergasted with the inventiveness, the ideas, the musicalities. And so finally it looked like everything calmed down, and we were no longer in the precarious situation where we thought there was going to be an atomic war. One ballet that I did of Balanchine's called La Sonnambula was an incredible success. I was in it as a somnambulist. And everyone loved me in it. So it was a personal success, which was very gratifying. And actually, that was really a long time ago. 1962.
What year was that?
1962, so...
I wasn't even born over half yet. Like that. I got seven over years more. What happened in 1969? I love that.
Well, yeah, it's over half a century ago.
It's so amazing. You know, one of the things that I really loved talking with you about before we went on the show were there pictures of you. There are so many. I don't know if you've ever, you know, gotten on the computer and Googled Allegra Kent. There are some of the most beautiful photographs of you. Just so many of them, I didn't even know what to quite choose for this show. Would you share some of your favorite photos?
Well,
describe them maybe.
Yeah. Well, I love the one. I think you might have it because you've been researching this. It's the one Balanchine and me taking a bow in Russia, actually Leningrad, and I'm in the La Sonnambula costume, and he's just beaming, and we're both thrilled. People were throwing bouquets at me. And when I say Leningrad, it's now back to its original name, St. Petersburg. But during the Stalin era and the Soviet Union era, they had changed it to Leningrad. So, that photo I love.
I do too. I'm sorry.
And then also, one of my favorite ballets that I danced was the second movement of Symphony in C. The music is Bizet. And I think you might have a photograph of me in that. It's a white tutu, and I'm in a penché arabesque. And I'm not sure what else you have.
No, I do. There were so many of them, and they're beautiful. And it just seems like everything about you is beautifully graceful, even to this day. Just absolutely beautiful and graceful and kind. And it's really a treat to be able to speak with you and share your story with our audience. I really just appreciate you taking
the time. Well, if you want to read my book, my grown-up book, it's called Once a Dancer. And at the moment, I'm teaching at Barnard College. And I'm working on two other children's books. So
neat. Do you, when you walk into the room and you see all those little faces, the 7-year-olds or 9-year-olds or the 11-year-olds, do you ever see yourself? Do you ever there's a great one?
Well, basically, at Barnard, it's a college, so they
older,
are...
Yeah.
They're 19, and a lot of them love ballet, but they've decided they're going to go in a different direction, but they want to continue their love of dance. So dancers are smart.
I was going to say that about you because it's almost like you could teach history also. With the places you've been.
maybe some kind of history, a personal history.
Yeah. Well, no, I just think it's interesting all the places that you've been in and the time where you've been there. It's quite fascinating.
Yes. I mean, that would be the Cuban Missile Crisis from the inside, what it was like. And the company also went to Australia in 1958, Japan. We went to Denmark, Germany, Austria, France. We just went all over the world.
Yeah.
And that was so terrific, you know, to see so much and go to the museums and see the art in of the country and the music and just learn as much as you can. But of course, you're rehearsing, you're in theater working, but whenever you get a chance, you know, you get to go out and get a flavor of the country.
When I'm going to go back to the young kids again for a second here. Do you ever spot? I don't know if you're ever in this situation even, but are you ever called upon to say, Allegra, can you come look at this ballerina? We've found, you know, someone who's like you or great or, you know, those types of things. Do people call upon you to have you evaluate dancers?
No, and I'm glad they don't, because I don't want to do that, evaluate someone. But I do coach the parts I used to dance. So in a professional company, if someone's doing Bugaku or Serenade or Symphony in C or a Pas de Deux from Midsummer's Night Dream, I love to help dancers, professional dancers, with their work. And because I tell them what Balanchine told me. So it's a way of passing on those thoughts that I
beautiful.
Oh.
Yeah.
So
beautiful.
Yeah, but I, you know, I don't evaluate people because I feel that that's not my place.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was just sort of wondering where I knew you were passing it forward somewhere, and I was just trying to figure out where it might be, if it was with professionals or kids, or I didn't know if it might be kids since you had this children's book. But I think you do that through the kids with the children's book and the adults the other way. I get it.
Well, I have three children. I had them when I was during my 20s, so that was kind of crazy thing to do in the ballet sense. But
yeah.
I wanted to play with children, my own children, so that's why I did that. And I have grandchildren. I have four grandchildren. And I just love playing with children. But I don't want to evaluate someone young, because everybody takes ballet for different reasons. And so I don't just want to, I just want to see professionals and help them. And if someone in the audience asks me opinion about a dancer I just saw on stage, they say, well, what did you think? And I usually say, it doesn't matter what I think. It what's important is what you think. Because I don't want to have a conversation or a kind of conversation where I'm saying, oh, it just touched me, and they're saying, oh, I didn't like it at all. I mean, that something like that doesn't go anywhere.
Right. Yeah, it never does in any kind of sense or setting.
No, because people get different things. If, for instance, I like to read a certain kind of book, other people wouldn't like that book. Some people like mysteries. I prefer maybe reading old fiction, Balzac and, you know, Stendhal.
Yeah.
And but a history and biographies, almost any age, I mean, modern biographies or historical, because I love to learn about people and their childhoods. But there's certain kind of books I just don't interest me, and that's the same. Everyone has favorites in every field. Even people say, oh, this is my favorite flower. I won't even say that, because
funny.
One minute I love irises so much, and then I love roses, and I love, you know, it's just too hard.
It is. I agree with you, too. People say, what's your favorite color? And I'm like, well, today it's yellow or whatever. It's funny.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
So, yeah. It's sort of taboo to the moment. Who's your favorite painter? So I have many favorites and many, you know.
That means you're positive. That's beautiful. I think when you have a ton of favorites, it means you have a zest for life and super positive and have a ton of great energy. So I think that's all good.
Yeah, and it's good to be. It's good to be curious. Curiosity is so important.
I agree with you.
Because then you
can totally agree with you.
You can pursue your curiosity. Well, I was curious about ballet. I didn't know what it was. So I did find out, and
yes, you did, didn't you?
And I loved it.
You know, the whole time we're talking, you might hear my phone buzzing in the background because people are tweeting with questions for you, and in social media, people are asking me questions to ask you. And one of the questions that three people have asked now is, can you talk more about your mom? Because
my mother.
Sounds like you. Yes. People are asking if you would talk more about your mom.
Well, my mother was very, very restless. And that's why we changed our home, well, our apartment, so many times during World War II. Because she wanted to solve problems by outdistancing problems. So if things were not going well in Florida, she thought, oh, let's go to California, and then let's go back to Florida. And then when the war was over, we were in Miami Beach, which was very different there than it is now. There were empty lots. It's just a different place. And so she wasn't that happy there. All the soldiers had left, and so she thought, also during my last year, my fourth grade in Miami Beach, Florida, we had 20 substitute teachers because the kids were difficult, and then they learned that they could get a substitute to lead by really being impossible. And so my mother thought, I think my children should go to boarding school. And she chose this boarding school, and I knew nothing about it. I was 9 years old, my brother 10, and I got there, and I thought, oh, I hate this. I'm alone. I miss my mother. My mother had painted it in glorious pictures, and here I was, alone. But when she left, I didn't cry because there was no point in crying. It wouldn't have done any good.
It was done.
Oh, so my mother made very strange decisions. And then when I told her I wanted to become a ballerina, she became totally behind me and helped me tremendously. So she didn't really work. We didn't live with my father because my mother and father were divorced. And she didn't really approve of my father. So I wasn't close to him. And so she could just change the side. She was dissatisfied. But she didn't work because basically he supported us.
Right.
And he was a traveling salesman at that point. So this is dating back to the 40s, where traveling salesmen that had sold dresses to department stores would carry the dresses around in their car and then rent a hotel room, and then the buyers would come in and buy it. So it was a kind of, my mother thought that was really low class to be a traveling salesman. And so we came to New York, and she had nothing to do. So she was a little bit too much involved with me and my sister. I didn't mention I had a sister also. And that was not good because it's lucky to have a working mother and not someone who's just on top of you every minute. And she made a lot of decisions for me. We're Jewish, but suddenly we became Christian Scientists, and
she made a lot of decisions, didn't she?
For me, that was a very bad religion because I just didn't want to. I mean, there are Christian Scientists today, and I don't want to say anything that might offend them. But for me, I couldn't pray away a soft corn. And it just didn't work for me personally. After I had my first baby, I gave up Christian Science totally because I thought, if my baby cries, I don't know why she's crying, and I want to have a doctor for her and find out if she's just crying like babies do cry or if there's something wrong with her.
Sure.
So... and then my mother sort of pushed me a bit into my first marriage because she felt it would be a lot of security for me, but we were incompatible. And I left him after the first 2 weeks. He was a famous photographer. But my mother encouraged me to go back. She said, "You must go back. You have to go back." So I was sort of, something in my nature made me very susceptible to listening to advice. And very often you can give and follow bad advice. When people today ask me for advice, I say, well, no, maybe I would do this. That's my advice. But don't listen to me.
Follow your own heart and so forth.
You can give wrong advice. People have to figure things out, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, I think of all of that, one of the things I'm hearing is kind of like you definitely kind of know what you like and don't like. You seem more decisive than ever in a way.
Well, it took me a long time to be to become.
Yeah.
To trust my own judgment. But other people don't have this problem. But on stage, I didn't have this problem. So it was like, it was a total kind of different thing. My mother was very gregarious. She loved talking. I mean, that was, some people just love, they're very loquacious. They love talking. And I was very quiet. I didn't like to have lots of conversation. But when I found dance, that became my conversation, my powerful conversation. But it wasn't in words. It was through movement and the music that I expressed myself and wanted to express myself. So that's a bit about my mother.
Yeah, that's a great bit about your mother. It's a great bit about parenting in general too. There's some good takeaways right there that I think we all need to listen to. The other question we're going to come short on time here. We've got just about 5 more minutes to chat with you, and I think we're pushing it a little bit here.
Right.
Somebody wants to know, of all the things that you've done, do you have a favorite?
Dancing.
Yeah, I think they meant
LA.
Like of all the places that you've danced or things that
you mean a favorite location?
Location or a favorite performance or?
I think 1962 in Russia, La Sonnambula.
Okay, yeah, I think we knew that answer kind of, but I thought I would ask again. And then what is the other? Hang on, just 1 second. We have another question here. It's about your kids and grandkids. Can you hear me still?
Yes. Happy. I live in New York City, and 2 of my children live in Connecticut and 1 in New York City. So I'm really lucky that I can visit them so often. I just get on the train and go up. I don't have to cross an ocean. And I love playing with my grandchildren.
Does anybody... dance or do they follow in your
dance,
beautiful ballerina step?
They don't want to become professionals. They just like taking their classes and moving. And so actually, you know, it's a career. It's a hard career. And I think it's good just to dance if you love it. But, you know, some people are, they want to pursue it to professional status, and my grandchildren don't. And that's fine with me. They should just, you can't totally, you can push your kids to be disciplined and good study habits, and but you can't push them into a profession.
You can't, can you? I totally agree with that. I have four very different kids, each one doing their own thing, but you could see, it's interesting because at a young age you could see the passion for what they each do. It's very, it was always, with our kids, it was very clear kind of where their passions were, and they haven't really wavered from that. Like one always looked up at the sky and the stars, and he's going to go to school to be a meteorologist.
Fantastic.
That kind of thing. Yeah, so, but
and
never
some children are not decided, and they don't have a passion until later. You know, there's no formula for any
individual. No, I totally agree.
And but the good thing is to always work hard, study, be focused, and drink milk. I mean, everyone's drinking this.
Drink milk. That's cute.
They're drinking milk crazy. Yeah, we need our calcium. Oh, my gosh. Don't I sound peculiar? Anyway, this has been wonderful.
All good. Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Peculiar as you want. We love you. And thank you very much for being with us. And just I want to mention your book one more time, both of them. Once a Dancer. That's more of a memoir that you were saying, a real-life account, autobiography. And then there's Ballerina Swan. That is a children's book that is very close. As I read this, I'm like, oh, I think I know her already. It's your story, and it's beautifully beautifully written, and I just appreciate you being with us. Thank you so much, and
thank you for asking me.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you very much. Take care. And everybody, that's Allegra Kent. She's just absolutely a beautiful person and soul, and her book, Ballerina Swan, is available wherever books are sold. And it's beautifully illustrated also by Emily Arnold McCulley. She's a Caldecott medalist. And, again, this book is just beautiful. And we put the book on our Best Ever You Best Books list for January. So you can go to besteveryou.com and click on the book section. And Allegra's book is right there in the Best Book section with a link to purchase it. And I think I put the Amazon link up. And we gave it our Best Ever You Blue Ribbon Award, and we just really appreciate Allegra being with us. So thank you, Allegra, again. And thank you all so much for listening. Take care and have a beautiful day.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Best Ever You Network. For more information, just visit us at besteveryou.com.